Bob Polk, minister to youth of the Riverside Church in the city of New York, joined our WRVR reporting team in Birmingham to explore opinions, attitudes, and experiences of the young Negroes taking part in the integration campaign. During this program, you will hear a number of Negro teenagers discussing with him their attitudes and experiences.
Well, first of all, I have been sitting around the house, reading the paper, seeing what's going to happen the next day and things like this. So one of my friends approached me with the idea of going down to a youth meeting. The youth meetings were held in the afternoon at 4 o'clock. And one day I went down, and they were holding a workshop, and I became very interested. And they were teaching you and giving you instructions as to the nonviolent program. And I went back the next day, and I find myself going back every day. And this really, this is the real reason that I really joined the movement, because of the nonviolent program. And it was so interesting and so intriguing that I had to get in it.
I think the best thing you can do for us at this point is tell us some of the teachings that they put forth the days that you went to the workshops in terms of the nonviolent movement.
Well, first of all, and very important, they told us about the teachings of God and love. We need to love our fellow men and our neighbor, and no matter how much harm or discord is inflicted upon us, we were told and we were taught that nonviolence and kindness and love, forgiveness and understanding were very vital in this struggle, and that this is very important. And we were taught to go along those things. Then we were given instructions as to when you are approached by an officer or something, someone like that, and you were beaten or struck, then we were told not to strike back, and we were told not to have violent thoughts. Everything about us was to be nonviolent. This nonviolent program has really changed my outlook on humanity, period.
Catherine, would you comment on the use of children and teenagers in the demonstrations?
This was very important, because after all, these kids weren't, told that this was something they had to do. We presented them with the facts. They realized the situation and what had to be done, and they plunged right in with the movement to get it done, because they know that this is their town. They have to live here. And unless this is settled it's not to be lingered on and on. And those kids are really interested. They want to come to an early agreement and really get the thing started. And without the kids, the movement wouldn't have been as successful as it was. The kids were wonderful, wonderful kids.
Do you feel, finally, that the demonstrations and going to jail have been worth the effort?
Yes, very much so. My experiences in jail were awful. I had an awful time. They pushed me around and everything, but the kids there, I was in a cell with approximately 183 girls, and all of us, we just had a wonderful time. We were treated like animals, let's say. And
can you spell out this treatment for me? In what way were you treated like animals?
All right, maybe I should start from the beginning. I led the line with Dick Gregory. We let the first group of demonstrators out on Monday morning.
Dick would always pick the best-looking girl to lead the line.
And after we were taken to the jail, we were taken out of the wagons and we were put in the yard and locked up. So we were waiting around the yard about an hour and a half. No one had come out to take us in and place or anything. So some officers came to the gate and they started let the kids out. And I had been instructed that to take care of the kids, and maybe I should say that I am secretary of the Student Committee for Human Rights here in Birmingham. And so I approached the officer and I asked him what was he going to do with the kids? And he asked me, well, why was I concerned? And so I told the kids, I said, stop right here. You won't go to any place. Just wait until he tells you where you're going. And so he said, well, I'm just going to take them over on the other side of the fence because they're juveniles. And then he told the officer to take me inside the building. The officer pushed me around and poked me in the back with his club and everything. And I was taken into the office there, and I was asked a lot of questions. And all of the questions I didn't answer. I refused to comment, other than my name, my address, and my age. And after that, I asked the officer, what was I being charged with other than the violation of Section 1159 of City Code? And he said, no comment. You know, very frankly, he wouldn't even tell me why, you know, I was in there. Then he took me and put me in a cell.
By yourself?
No, there were a couple other girls in, but they had been in before. They were arrested the Saturday before. And I went in willingly. And after about an hour and a half of in the cell and talking to the girls, it started raining. Those kids were still outside. So I started banging on the door, you know. And there was this, another girl with me. Her name is Mary Hamilton. And so we started banging on the door, and he came in and told us what was the matter, and we better stop doing that because he would beat us. And so we told him to get those kids in out of the rain. And he said, those kids are doing all right. And we said, those kids are going to catch pneumonia. And everything was thundering and everything. And we told him to get them in out of the rain. And he said, go somewhere and sit down and call us niggas and things. So we told him, if you don't get those kids out of the rain, so we're going to really tear the place up. And he said, I dare you. I said, if you bam on the doors once more, I said, I'll put you in solitary confinement. So we didn't say anything. But the minute that he walked out of the door, I grabbed another door, and Mary grabbed the window. We started shaking the bars. And he came back in. They put us in solitary, and I was in a cell designed for one person. There were 12 of us in there. And we were all over on top of each other, and some of the girls had to crawl up on the bars to keep from, you know, stepping on someone. It was very crowded. We stayed in solitary for about 5 hours without food, water, or toilet facilities. Then we were released, and they were given cold, stale bologna sandwiches, which we could not eat, so we decided to drink water. Around about 2 o'clock, we were taken upstairs on the third floor, and there we were put on cold steel bunks without cover. And there were so many girls that some of them had to sleep on the floor in newspaper. And these conditions prevailed for about 2 days. And we were taken upstairs, early in the morning, Tuesday. And we really didn't have anything to eat since Monday, because we couldn't eat those bologna sandwiches. And we were deprived the privilege of having breakfast Tuesday morning, which actually means that we didn't get anything to eat until noon on Tuesday. The girls were very hungry, and we went downstairs, and their food was so bad that the girls got sick, and they had a little bar there. And really, I actually lived off payday candy bars, Tip-Tock Lucky Cakes, and water. Really, they had the only thing that was eatable in the whole place was applesauce, and you just couldn't eat applesauce all the time and live. And then we were taken, you know, back every time we were marched in a line back up to the cell, and if you hesitated for a moment, you were poked in the back and the side with clubs from the officers. They call us all kinds of names. They call us everything but children of God. And every day, every morning, we would have a prayer meeting. And in the afternoon, before we would go to dinner, we had a prayer meeting. And always before bedtime, we remembered God, and we thought that He remembered us. And on Tuesday, when we heard that we had a great big mass demonstration downtown, and the people outside were still interested, and they were striving to get the problem settled, I was just overwhelmed with joy. This was real wonderful. Everything was real dull. The toilet facilities were filthy. It wasn't fit for an animal. You wouldn't treat an animal like this. When we got there, we didn't even have soap. We had no toilet tissue, anything. Just had a big sink there with water. But the girls survived. And let's see. Oh, yes, I found out that they were taking some of the girls out of the cell. They called us freedom fighters. It would take some of us freedom fighters out of the cell. And we always wondered where they took these girls. So I left the jail Saturday, around about 12 noon. But before I left, I found out that they were taking the girls, these young girls, 17 and 18 years old, down and put them in the cell with the inmates. And you had all kind of people down there, drunks and just everybody down there. And they were put them in there. And I was later told that they put them in there with the idea that those inmates would you know, attacked them, yes. But I was told that the girls were treated nice, that they were protected. They told the policeman the inmates told the policeman that they were hurting them, that they were beating them, but actually they were very nice to them. And this is very wrong. I feel that I must go back to jail because there has been some complications on my part as far as I was getting bonded out. And this is a mistake on the part of the city, but my lawyer told me that to expect to be picked up at any moment. And I hope to God they don't put me in there with those inmates.
How did you find out that they were taking the girls down to the cells with the male inmates? In other words, how does communication get around in city prison?
Well, these girls, after, you know, when they said that they were going to bond everyone out, then they brought them back upstairs, and they told us about it, and they said it was very bad. But as far as communication within the cell, we would get close to the window, and, you know, we would holler up out of the window, and that's how we would do it. Now, one night, everybody was very...
May I stop you here just a minute?
All right.
Are you saying, in effect, then, that the inmates... the male inmates, where they took some of the girls, these were female inmates,
yes,
respected what you were there for and the movement. They respected the movement in such a way that they did not molest or bother you.
Yes, very much. So they told them they were proud of them and that they were doing something in which they had no strength. They had no strength to do these things, and they were really proud of them and told them to have no fear. Anything that they wanted to come to them, and they would help them. Even the drunks pitched in and said that this is something that... it should be done, and we're very proud of you. I took my Bible, and I would go around to the girls, and we would get together, and we would read, and we would sing. And one night, one night we were very depressed. We were told that they had put water on the boys. I know that the boys were sleeping outside because we could look out of the window at night and see the boys outside. And we just started singing, and we sang all night. That was Thursday night. We sang all night. And early in the morning, we were still singing. I was tired, but I said, I must keep going.
I think it's best to identify the noises that we hear above. We are at one of the mass rallies at the 6th Avenue Baptist Church. This is Bob Polk reporting for radio station WRVR, Riverside Church in New York City. I would like to find out some of the interesting things that happened to you.
Well, at first, when we started getting organized for that... demonstration and thing, we was meeting at 16th Street Baptist Church, and to rectify, the young lady that was taking up names, your address and telephone number, and how long would you like to stay in jail, and I was in there for 2 days, and we marched down 7th Avenue, and the police stopped us after we had gotten a block away from the church, and they took us on to jail, and I was there about 2 days before we can get anything to eat. And the first night we was there, they cut their fan on. They had the fan blowing on us all night long.
Is this cold air from the fan or warm air?
Cold air.
Cold air.
Cold air.
How long would it take before you got something to eat?
It was about a day and a half. Mm-hmm.
And how many students were arrested with you?
It was about 50.
About 50. Mm-hmm. What were the conditions like once you got into jail?
It was awful. They mugshot us, took our fingerprints. Then, I mean, they treat us sort of rough-like.
They rough you up at all? Any specifically hit you or beat you or anything like this?
No.
What were some of the reactions of the students in the jail?
Well, they seemed to enjoy it because they feel, all of them feel that they was helping their race.
Mm-hmm. Some of the newspapers, and both locally and in New York and around the country, have mentioned the fact that they were not very... They had mixed feelings about the use of teenagers, children, maybe even college students in terms of the demonstrations. I wonder how you feel about yourself being a college student and the reactions of some of the younger children and teenagers in this whole situation.
Well, the teenagers, he was going along with this 100%, and the elementary school kids were going along with it 100%. And the youngest we had was demonstrating with us was a six-year-old girl.
Six-year-old girl. Did she get put in jail also?
Yes, she was. Juvenile court.
Juvenile court. Mm-hmm. Do you think it was right to use students in this kind of venture, or should it have been, relatively speaking, closer to the college level and the adults?
Well, I don't think the adults go along with Well, with this, like the students, well, the way the students feel that this should have taken place a long time ago. And the kids want their kids now to have a better opportunity in life.
How do you feel about the whole nonviolent movement?
At first, when we started having meetings in church, you'll find a lot of the high school kids that was coming in with knives, razors, and fingernail files and compass and all sorts of things like that. But they couldn't march with those things in their pockets, because that's one thing would give the police something to book them on. So in the church, Reverend Bevel took those things up. And the way I feel, about 2 or 3 years ago, now things like this come up, I had a very quick temper. Then I found out later that I couldn't get along in life with this temper I had, so I had to get rid of it and try to change. And now that I have, I think I can go along with anything, any situation here.
And this preparation came through the Reverend Mr. Bevel, Mr. Young, other people who have prepared you for this program?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.